Okay, so we're diving into the world of secure software development, and you've given us a ton of info to unpack with these excerpts from 002 CRISC Domain 8-Section2.pdf.
Yeah, this stuff's everywhere these days, isn't it? You know, even if you don't write a line of code yourself, everyone's using software, and all that software, it needs to be secure. That's what we're gonna dig into today. By the end of this deep dive, you'll be talking about classes and objects like a pro.
Okay, so no coding boot camp required for our listeners then.
I like it. So this document jumps into the history of programming languages, which, I'll be honest, can seem about as exciting as watching paint dry, but it's important stuff. It starts with machine language, personally. Zeros and ones just aren't my love language. Can't imagine having to write out code like that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher to imagine, right? I mean, it's the earliest form of programming, but thankfully it's a lot more, well, human readable these days. Thank goodness for assembly language, right? At least that gave us commands like ADD. Still pretty bare bones, but hey, it's a start. Right, baby steps. But then we made a big leap forward with high-level languages, am I right?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Languages like Fortran and COBOL really changed the game. Suddenly, you didn't have to be a computer whisperer to write code. And this is where things get juicy from a security angle, because high-level languages brought us this huge shift. Object-oriented programming. We call it OOP.
OOP. I hear that term thrown around a lot. What makes it so revolutionary? It sounds like the best thing since sliced bread for software development, or is that an exaggeration?
No exaggeration. I don't know, imagine if you had to build a house, right? And I mean, build it from scratch. Every single brick, every plank of wood. That's kind of how programming was before OOP. Then OP came along, and it's like someone handed you pre-built walls, doors, windows.
Okay, that makes way more sense than trying to bake code bricks. So OOP is all about like reusable components.
Exactly. We call those components objects. They're the building blocks. And they're based on these things called classes, which are like blueprints. So let's say you're building a social media app. You might have a class for user that says, okay, a user needs a username, a password, maybe a profile picture. Then each new person who signs up, they become an object based on that class with their own unique data.
Makes sense. So instead of writing the same code over and over for each new user, you just create this blueprint and tweak it. Saves time, keeps things organized.
You're getting it.
Yeah.
And that organization, that's key for security. This document we've got, it compares a well-designed program to a well-organized house. If everything's labeled and in its place, way easier to find what you need, fix problems, keep things secure.
Love that analogy.
Okay.
Okay, so OOP brought some order to the Wild West of early programming. What happened next?
That, my friend, is where things get even more interesting. We're talking Python, C++, Java languages that took those OOP principles and really, really ran with them. They made code cleaner, more efficient. Suddenly, you could build much more complex software.
It's mind-blowing how these languages evolve to handle such complexity.
You know, it is, isn't it?
But of course, with great power comes great responsibility, right?
Always.
And speaking of responsibility, this document dives into some really crucial concepts for building secure software. There's this one part that talks about cohesion and coupling. Honestly, those words always make me think of like a high school physics class, which I barely passed. Can you break those down for me in plain English?
Definitely. It's actually a lot less intimidating than it sounds. Think of it like building a car, right? You want all the parts to work together, obviously, but you don't want one loose screw in the engine to make the whole thing fall apart on the highway.
Okay, terrifying analogy,
Yeah.
but I get your point. So how does that apply to building secure systems?
So cohesion, that's all about how well the different parts within a module, like one specific part of the system, how well they all work together. You want high cohesion, like a well-organized toolbox. Every tool has a purpose, right?
So it's about creating those focus modules, everything in its place. What about coupling then?
Coupling is more about how much those different modules depend on each other. Ideally, you want low coupling, meaning changes in one module shouldn't cause a domino effect and mess up a bunch of others. Going back to the car, you wouldn't want your brakes to stop working if the radio glitches out, would you?
I mean, I really wouldn't. So, high cohesion, well-defined modules, low coupling, clear boundaries between them.
Got it. But how does that actually make the software more secure?
Think of it this way. When your code is well organized, high cohesion, low coupling, it's just easier to understand, easier to test. vulnerabilities, they're way less likely to slip through the cracks because you can actually see how everything connects.
Makes sense. It's like it's easier to find a rogue sock in a perfectly organized drawer than in a huge, messy pile of laundry.
Exactly.
And if a problem does pop up, it's way easier to fix it without breaking something else in the process. Now, there's another concept this document touches on, polyinstantiation. It's a mouthful, I know.
Yeah, that one sounds a little intimidating, not gonna lie.
Don't worry, it's not as scary as it sounds. It's all about keeping sensitive information safe. Imagine a database, right, with employee information. Polyinstantiation lets you have, like, multiple versions of that data, but each version has different security levels.
So it's kind of like some people see the basic info, others get the top secret stuff.
You got it. Someone in HR might need access to salary details, but someone in marketing... Not so much. It's like having different levels of security clearance for accessing stuff within a system.
Clever. So it helps you control exactly who sees what. Speaking of access and control, this document goes deep on developer tools, starting with integrated development environments. I think I've heard those called IDEs, right? What are those? Some super exclusive developer club.
Not exactly. Think of it as a developer's superpower toolbox, an IDE. It's a single platform where they can write their code, test it, find the bugs, you name it. And they're seriously advanced these days. They can even help with things like security analysis.
So it's like the ultimate productivity hack for programmers.
Yeah.
But with all of those features, are there security concerns with IDEs themselves? Could they be a vulnerability?
You're thinking like a security pro. That's a great question. Now, IDEs themselves, generally very secure. This document, though, it points out a potential issue. It's the plugins, the add-ons that developers sometimes use. If those aren't from trusted sources, if they're not kept updated, that's where things can get dicey.
So it's like adding fancy features to your car. Got to make sure those additions don't actually make it less safe, right?
Yeah.
It's not just having the tools, it's using them carefully. Okay, so let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk code repositories and version control. I know there are these platforms, GitHub being one, but I'll be honest, they're a bit of a mystery to me.
I like to think of them as the collaborative heart of software development. It's where developers come together to work on projects. These platforms track every single change made to the code. It's like, imagine multiple people trying to edit the same document at the same time. Recipe for disaster, right? Version control, that's our saving grace.
So it's like having a detailed history of every edit, every tweak to a document. Okay, that makes sense. But how does this relate to secure software for, you know, the average person?
That is the million-dollar question. So these code repositories, especially the ones that host open-source software, they're incredible. It's all about sharing. Developers can share code, build on each other's work. It's how innovation happens fast. But of course, there's a flip side.
Let me guess. Open-source code isn't always squeaky clean.
Exactly. It's not always intentional, but sometimes vulnerabilities can sneak into open-source components. And if those components end up in other software without anyone checking, those vulnerabilities, they spread like wildfire.
Yikes, like a bad batch of ingredients ending up in a whole bunch of cakes. So how do we avoid that recipe for disaster?
That's where the next piece of the puzzle comes in. Application security testing. We're talking about rigorously testing software throughout its entire existence from the moment it's just an idea. It's like having a dedicated team of taste testers making absolutely sure that software is safe to use. No nasty surprises.
Okay, so we got our taste testers. What are they actually doing? The document mentions a bunch of different testing methods, but honestly, it's an alphabet soup. SASC, DATE, DASTRIT, DASTRIT, what does it all mean?
Right, it's like a secret code, isn't it? Don't worry, I'm here to decode.
Please do.
Okay, so SASC, that stands for Static Application Security Testing. It's all about examining the source code itself, like looking for weaknesses in the blueprint before you even start building.
So no fancy software simulations, just looking at the raw code.
Pretty much. It's a very meticulous process, analyzing the code line by line to find any security flaws. And then you've got DAS, Dynamic Application Security Testing. This one's more like taking the software for a spin, seeing how it behaves in the wild.
So if SAST is checking the recipe, DAST is tasting the final dish.
Exactly. Great analogy. And then there's IAST, or Interactive Application Security Testing. It's like having a security camera running inside your software 24/7, watching every little thing that happens.
Okay, so it's the most, I don't know, vigilant of the three.
You could say that. ISS gives you real-time feedback, tells you exactly where a vulnerability might be hiding in the code. And there's one more acronym to add to the mix, even though it's not a testing method itself, SCA, or Software Composition Analysis. It's all about securing the software supply chain.
Okay, this is where I get lost. Supply chain.
Remember we were talking about those open source components and the risks they can bring? That's where SCA comes in. These tools scan through the code and identify every single third-party library, every component. Imagine it like a background check for your software.
Making sure none of the ingredients are expired or something.
Exactly. SCA helps make sure that everything's on the up and up, that you're using those open source components safely and legally. It's all connected, secure code, secure components, secure systems. It's a team effort.
Yeah, sounds like it. It's like building a house, you know? You need strong walls, a sturdy roof, a good security system. You can't just focus on one thing.
Exactly. Building secure software. It's not a one-and-done thing. It's something you got to think about every step of the way, from the initial design to the ongoing maintenance. And it's not just on the developers. Everyone involved has a role to play in making sure things are secure.
This deep dive has definitely given me a whole new appreciation for how complex this all is and how important it is. We've gone from like the birth of programming languages to testing and everything in between. It's clearly not just for techies anymore.
You got it. We all rely on technology every single day. So the more we know about how it works, the potential risks, the better choices we can make. It's all about staying informed and advocating for systems that are, well, systems we can actually trust.
Couldn't agree more. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this deep dive. This has been an incredible conversation.
My pleasure. Always happy to geek out about secure software.
And to everyone listening, thanks for sticking with us on this journey into the world of secure software development. Remember, a little knowledge goes a long way. Until next time, stay curious out there.